Bob, as you know, you've been really essential to the committee, and you have a pollinator pathway at the college and helping with the pesticide reduction efforts, which is another campaign we're still gearing up on. We want to actively campaign against mosquito spraying because it's so unnecessary, and there are other ways, alternatives to mosquito spraying if you truly do have a problem. And mosquito spraying is detrimental to all the other insects in spite of what the companies might say to you. They're made to kill, those products are made to kill insects, and they're not discriminating.
Hello, and welcome to Green Dragon, a monthly show where we talk about green initiatives in Maryland and Howard County and ongoing sustainability efforts at Howard Community College and ideas and ways for you to be more sustainable at home. I'm Bob Marietta, HCC's Environmental Health and Safety Supervisor. And I thank you for watching today. My guest today is Nancy Lawson, the author of The Humane Gardener, Nurturing a Backyard Habitat for Wildlife and Wildscape, and many articles encouraging us to look in our own backyard gardens to observe and wonder at the connected interplay of plants and animals. Nancy, today is April 22nd, Earth Day. So I'd like to start by asking you what you remember about your very first Earth Day and the early days of the environmental movement.
Yeah, so I actually remember Arbor Day more because that was what my elementary school focused on in the 1970s, planting trees and such. And I think back then, at least where I grew up in Prince George's County, our Earth Days were focused more on abstract concepts. So things that were sort of further away from home than what we tend to do now with children to celebrate Earth Day. So my funniest memory of Earth Day was when I was a reporter in Chicago in my early 20s. And I was assigned to cover a school recycling event. And I asked a little kid how long her family had been recycling. And she said, since it first came out. Which made me think, wow, everything is a product, right? Everything is commercialized. And so, but yeah, I certainly celebrate it differently now, but I think back then it wasn't as much of a thing.
I still remember the first one when I was in high school, and we made a big deal out of it. It was a big party out in the outdoors. And so everybody enjoyed taking part of it.
Yeah, maybe, I don't know, maybe it died down a little by the time I got into high school. It was the 1980s in high school, so you know, those are some bad years in some respects. For the environment.
Yeah, there was a lot going on in those days. Okay. Now, Nancy, you've written for magazines and papers like All Animals, The American Gardener, the Philadelphia Inquirer, the Chicago Tribune, and your garden and books have been featured in the New York Times, Science Magazine, the Washington Post, Oprah Magazine, Entomology Today, Ecological Engineering, and others. What advice can you offer other writers who feel that they have things to share with the rest of us?
Yeah, so you know that old cliche that you often hear, write what you know. I think a lot of people who want to write fiction are told that. But I started out as a journalist, and I really developed a huge respect for the value of research. And so even though I do like to write a lot of things from a personal perspective, I also like to keep it grounded in facts and in science and in things that I'm learning. And I think when you just write what you know, you're not pushing yourself to learn. And those are the ways that you can learn more about the world as you're writing, and also figure out how to translate it to people if you're trying to get them to care about a subject like nature. So I would encourage people to, you know, do the groundwork when they're writing.
Oh, that's very sage advice to students of all ages, I think. Now, Nancy, you're an accomplished writer, an editor, and a landscape professional, a master gardener, a scientist, a master naturalist, an animal welfare activist, and a public speaker. So when you get on the elevator, what's your spiel? What do you tell people you do when you get on the elevator?
I mean, that's like, that question hones in on something that's been really challenging for me for a long time, because when I started out on my own doing this work full time, it was hard for me to answer that question in a nutshell. Now I basically say I'm a nature writer and nature advocate, because fundamentally I'm a writer, and everything else I do springs out from there. But if somebody, you know, sometimes it depends on the person. You say what you do like that, and it either shuts them down. They don't want to know anymore. They want to know more. And if they want to know more, I tell them that my main mission and goal is to help people understand and learn to appreciate the plant and animal communities in their own spaces, in their own communities, and not just the birds and bees and butterflies, but also all the wildlife that has lived here like long before most of us have. And so the ones that are underappreciated too, like the snakes and the deer and the rabbits and all the mammals that people tend to have conflict with. So I don't know if that fits into it, going five floors on an elevator, but that's the part too.
I could see you could give a very different answer to like Crocodile Dundee and Warren Buffett, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
you know, totally different world that they're going for.
All right.
So what was the key moment or moments in your childhood that set you on the path to be the holistic proponent for the environment we see today?
I think it was a lot like what I hear from a lot of people, that just time spent out in nature and things like going camping with my family were really formative. From my earliest memory is being with my father in the forest. We were camping at Catoctin with some friends, and we were on a little hike, and it started pouring, and everyone else ran ahead, but I was just shy of 3 years old and I couldn't run very fast. So my dad and I were behind, and I just remember running under trees for safety, which I guess in a lightning storm, you're not supposed to do. But to me, it made me feel really safe because I was with my dad and he was giggling and so happy. And it just made me feel embraced by the forest. And I have a lot of memories like that, just flashbacks from my favorite place to like play with my dolls was under the three pine trees in my backyard. And I think just by being exposed to the soil and the scents and the sounds and seeing the raccoons washing their hands in the stream when we were camping, those things just made me realize there's a whole world out there and it doesn't have to be far away to explore.
Oh, what wonderful memories. So nowadays, with so much media awareness going on, and you know, some people are downright afraid of what's happening, what can a homeowner or business or other organization do to support our pollinators and the other critters? And why should they bother?
Yeah, well, first, I think you mentioned people being afraid. And so I want to address that. So animals are generally much more afraid of us than we are of them, and for good reason. And pollinators specifically, you know, I hear a lot about people being still thinking that you shouldn't have bees around because they're going to sting you. And I think that comes from the idea that you have to get in a beekeeper suit to be around bees, but that's only our introduced honeybees. And that's only when you're working right around their hive because they're defending their family, just like we would if you get too close. But most of our native bees are solitary bees, solitary nesters, so they don't have hives to defend. It would take a lot for them to want to sting you. You really have to mess with bees for them to want to sting you normally. And same goes for most wasps. Most are solitary. It's just those few social wasps that give wasps a bad reputation to people, but even they have a place in the environment. And, you know, we have ways of knowing where those nests are and cordoning them off or, you know, there's a lot to the ecology of these animals that people don't really understand until they start reading about it or they attend a talk. And then I think it helps break down the fears. So once you get past that, the best things that you can do to support pollinators and other animals are to nurture and plant native plants. A lot of places in Howard County already have native plants. If you just, use iNaturalist or something like that to get to know what's in your yard. It's really easy now. It used to be hard. You had to look in lots of books to ID things. And now with these apps, you can pretty easily figure out what's growing in your space. If you don't have native plants, go to any number of our local native plant sales, like you just had at Greenfest. And some of the nurseries also leave the dead wood where you can. We use dead wood as like ornamental things in our garden. So we line paths with it, and that's great for woodpeckers. That's also great for wood nesting bees. There's lots of native bees that nest in little cavities, and they tend to be really small. You may not even notice them. So there's lots of things that you can do that are actually fit in well with a garden that look pretty. Don't spray. There's no need to spray. If you're starting to encourage the local flora and floral and faunal communities, you can have native predation. You can have those checks and balances so that there isn't any one insect that gets too out of balance typically. I could go on forever about that. Sorry, that's a long answer to your question.
I love to hear you go on about it. And, yeah. So you mentioned some of this, but do you have a favorite natural community of plants, animals, and microorganisms? And what about that community appeals to you?
Yeah, so, well, forest is something that I know some people have a fear of, and sometimes understandably, depending on how you grew up or culturally, but forest and then also wetland is really, I don't know. I think it's somehow sometimes in our DNA to like that long expanse of grassland and water. And I mean, there's so much life there, you know, and the sounds, the frogs, the open sky. I really love going to Blackwater and places like that. Just maybe it's because I grew up here, the Bay. I love those communities.
That's wonderful. So how do you think Howard County and Maryland are doing with climate change and sustainability efforts? And what can each of us do to help to make it better?
Yeah, I've been really excited to be in Howard County, to be a part of Howard County and Maryland, and excited to see all the efforts just even, I mean, over time, but even the past few years, I feel like people have really ramped it up. And with the climate change action plan, there's a lot of thought going into, you know, not only what can various entities do, what can the county do with its resources, but how can we help change behavior and change the mindset? And to that end, I think there's so much in that plan, actually, that talks about what we can do to help mitigate climate change. And a lot of it goes back to even in your own space, like we were talking about, conserving what you already have, conserving the trees, planting. Also, telecommuting, I was so happy they mentioned things like that in the report. Obviously, going away from gas-powered equipment and things like that, but other ways that we can change our lifestyles, if possible. And, you know, I think it is possible for a lot of people now to drive less, especially in an area like Columbia, where there's a movement to make things more accessible, more sidewalks and things like that. It's already fairly walkable in certain communities. So yeah, and I've been overall really excited about Maryland efforts towards sustainability too, because, and a lot of them sort of are generated in Howard County, like with my sister's HOA case, where she lives in Columbia, not in CA, but in one of the other HOAs, Beach Creek. And they went after her a few years ago for her pollinator garden, and she and her husband fought back. And when the state delegates, Terry Hill, Jessica Feldmark, found out about it, they introduced legislation to make it a law that HOAs have to allow these types of gardens now. And that was amazing. And they were successful. And in Howard County also, that's where the Sustainable Buildings Act originated with Mark Sutherland, and then went up to the state level where we have actually legislation mandating public buildings having bird safe windows. So, you know, there's so much going on that it was seemed like a pipe dream to me just a few years ago. And that's because of this incredible community of environmentally minded people that we have here. And all the stuff you're doing at HCC, it's just really fantastic. Every time I go, it seems like there's a new initiative I see being promoted there and in your newsletter.
It's great to hear you say that. Sometimes we feel that nobody's noticing. We're just pumping it out into the void. Yeah. But I know you've worked with many local conservation organizations, including Bee City, which I'll ask you more about in a minute. But it often seems like there are just too many organizations and training opportunities, public events and on the internet. They seem to be competing with each other and even with government agencies for resources like land, money, and volunteers. How can a new person or even an old hand take it all in to decide where they and their resources like time and money would best be spent?
Yeah, I think that's a really, really good question, and one that's also good to pose to those of us who are involved in these different groups and endeavors. I mean, I was working at the national level for a national nonprofit before I went out on my own. And so it was a little bit intimidating at first to try to figure out what groups to check out in Howard County. I think one thing that is comforting about that, though, is that there is quite a bit of crossover now among the groups. I know with Bee City, we're still fairly young, 5 years old, but we are trying to figure out how to leverage our resources so that we're not being redundant with some of the other organizations that are also promoting pollinators and pollinator habitat. And I think as a person who's just coming into this, you know, we would really welcome anybody to come to our meetings. I know for Master Naturalists, Master Gardeners, Community Ecology Institute, all of these organizations are very welcoming. You do have to kind of just give them a call or show up, which is what I did when I first decided to get involved more locally because, you know, I had spent my days commuting almost an hour to Gaithersburg and back. And I really realized I wanted to be more active in my own community. And it's been so rewarding. So I really hope that I think the onus is on us to also make sure we are getting the word out and being inviting to people, but I hope that we can see more engagement in the future.
Good advice. So now tell us about Bee City and what is the Xerxes Society and what are cities doing across the country and what is Howard County doing in particular?
Yeah, the Xerxes Society for Invertebrate Conservation is devoted to protecting insects. So they lobby at the national level for insect conservation, endangered bees, endangered butterflies. And so Bee City is under the auspices of Xerxes, and there's about 200 bee cities around the country, and there's also almost 200 bee campuses. And our mission is to encourage more pollinator habitat, to bring back the pollinators and also other insects. So ones that may not really be pollinators so much, like fireflies, and to try to get both public landowners and private homeowners to create and nurture habitat. And so in Howard County, what we do to promote that is we have an annual Trees for Bees giveaway, which we just did at Greenfest, and residents of Howard County can get 2 free trees or shrubs. We have more and more classes now. We just had one this past weekend, and it's a walk and talk at Robinson Nature Center. And we're doing several more classes at the Miller Branch Library in May and June and July to help people understand what they can do in their own spaces for bees and butterflies and other insects. And we're always looking for more help. And Bob, as you know, you've been really essential to the committee, and you have a pollinator pathway at the college and helping with the pesticide reduction efforts, which is another campaign we're still gearing up on. We want to actively campaign against mosquito spraying because it's so unnecessary. And there are other ways, alternatives to mosquito spraying if you truly do have a problem. And mosquito spraying is detrimental to all the other insects, in spite of what the companies might say to you. They're made to kill, those products are made to kill insects, and they're not discriminating.
Yeah, good points. So what are you writing now? And when can we expect to have another book of yours to enjoy?
So I'm mostly working on articles. I write a column for the American Gardener magazine, which is part of the American Horticultural Society. That's new. It's a wildlife column. And for All Animals, for the Humane Society of the United States, where I used to work. Mostly I'm trying to get through some talks because it's pretty busy in the spring, but I do like to write a lot for my website, and I just did one, a piece called Is Your Yard Overgrown? And I mean, I'm sorry, Is Your Yard Undergrown? And the whole point was, I hate the word overgrown. And so, wait a minute, let's flip this around. So I'm working on pieces like that, that are just sort of article length. I haven't started a new book yet. I'm kind of enjoying that in between time. That's really where I started. I started as a journalist and writing short pieces is my comfort zone. So that's what I'm doing now.
Okay. So as a writer, who do you enjoy reading? What other authors are out there that you can recommend and ones that influence you?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So right now, well, I love Joan Maloof. She's on the Eastern Shore and she is the founder of the Old Growth Forest Network. She has a number of beautiful books. One is called Teaching the Trees that I think everyone should read. And then, of course, Robin Wall Kimmerer, Braiding Sweetgrass. I just read a gorgeous book called The Sounds of Life by Karen Becker. And it's all about oral communication between all different organisms, plants, animals, things we can't even necessarily hear because they're speaking to each other in a frequency that we can't detect. And I wrote about some of that in my book, Wildscape. It was about all the senses, but she takes a super deep dive into sound. I love that book. And then Crossings by Ben Goldfarb. I just read, he also wrote a book about beavers. And Crossings is about road ecology, which I also wish everyone would read and learn more about because we could do a lot to help wildlife just by slowing down, first of all, on the roads. So there's a lot of speeders in Howard County. I've talked to the police about it.
Right. Everybody's such a hurry these days.
Yeah.
Well, Nancy, this has been really enjoyable, but we've reached the end of our time for our show. So thank you so much for joining me today. I'll be back next month with another guest and another sustainable topic. And in the meantime, if you have ideas or comments, you can connect with me at rmarietta@howardcc.edu. You can listen to this and all of our other episodes at dragonpodcasts.podbean.com. And you can also catch us on HCCTV at the Howard Community College's YouTube page. So don't forget to share, like, comment, and let others know to join us and help us take care of our world. Because every small step each of us can take can have a great impact when we all act together. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Dragon Podcasts. Connect with us at podbean.com/dragonpodcasts.